Welcome to the Data Morgana podcast, the show in which we explore the future of the internet. I'm your host, Julia Jensen. I'm an artist researching the impact of technology on our society, and I'm a data protection ambassador. Data Morgana is an initiative by Public Spaces, a network of civic society organizations reclaiming the internet as a force for the common good. It's 2025. The internet has fallen into the hands of a few big tech companies. Under the promise to make our world better, more fair and efficient, they collect our data on a massive scale. But does this really make our world a better place? Or is it nothing more than an illusion, a data morgana? In this show, we're looking into hopeful initiatives happening around Europe that are shaping a better digital future. So I just had a conversation with Robin Burjon from Eurostack. This is a new and very interesting project. The Eurostack is bringing together technologists, civil society, businesses, and scholars in order to develop digital sovereignty in Europe. Their mission is to build a digital future that mirrors our democratic values, economic ambitions, and environmental commitments. Robin and I spoke about Europe's dependency on US big tech and why that puts us in a very fragile position. And one thing I recall vividly, it's all about infrastructures. Well, hi, Robin. Welcome to the Data Morgana podcast.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here.
We'll be talking about digital autonomy today, and I think this is one of the most pressing and urgent topics in the digital world currently. And it became ever so important after Trump re-inaugurated and the bromance between Musk and Trump and other tech CEOs openly supporting this new Trump administration. But before that, I mean, it was already urgent, but not really on the European agenda or even on top of people's mind, this topic of digital sovereignty. But I'm curious, did this originate from the possibility that something like this might happen? Did the people involved with the Eurostack anticipated on the possible dangers of something like this?
Right. I think that's exactly right. I mean, as you mentioned, Trump's inauguration made it more pressing, but the Eurostack project actually started earlier. It came from a series of discussions between a number of people, Christina Cafara, Francesca Bria, Meredith Whitaker, over the summer last year, early summer, about a year ago, I would say. And that progressively organized into, you know, a series of group chats on Signal. And that led to the organizing of a Eurostack event at the European Parliament in September last year. Mm-hmm. And from that, you know, the event was a major success. It was endorsed by five of the seven parties that are represented in Parliament. It was extremely well attended. There was a workshop in the morning and a plenary session afterwards. I don't have exact numbers, but the room was basically full, and it was one of the larger rooms there. Mm-hmm. And this led to, you know, a lot of momentum starting to pick up, and so this essentially founded what I would see as a big tent collective effort. So it's not like there isn't like a single Eurostack view. It's basically a general agreement that we need to do something about digital autonomy, that we need to do something about tech sovereignty, that, as we all know, the European Commission has had tech sovereignty as a priority since 2019, mm-hmm. So the previous mandate, but effectively very little has been done, or at least very little that has had any real-world impact. And so this broad coalition has led to the publication of multiple reports and multiple work items that have kept pushing this idea. So there was the pitch report in January last year. Then there was Francesca Bria's report, I think a month later. Then there was a letter signed by hundreds of European industry representatives in joining the European Commission to finally do something about this. And then there was a more recent report called the European Way. And now we're really transitioning to a period of actually trying to do something and to organize in the industry work and civil society work around this.
Yeah, and I'm super curious to hear more about what actually happened in these first messages. Like, I guess these were over Signal, but it's interesting because Meredith Whitaker is not European based. She is in the US. So how did this collaboration kind of originate? What was discussed in these talks?
I think it's important to distinguish digital sovereignty and seeking digital sovereignty from maybe something that could be classified as European nationalism. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of interest around the world in digital sovereignty, and that at the end of the day, all that means is enabling countries, enabling communities to have self-determination, to organize them, to decide for themselves how they wish to be organized and how their digital world should function. So it's not at all, it's not really about like, oh, everything has to be European, European is best, etc. It really is about, for Europeans, having our own sovereignty, but this also means collaborating with people elsewhere. So, for instance, the Brazilians have been working on this a lot. People in India have been working on this a lot. There's a lot of interest in Kenya, in Indonesia, and so there is essentially a global movement forming around digital sovereignty. And I think one of the interests in having a European focus is that the European Union, if it decided to move, is in a great position to do so. We still have a very much democratic system here. There's money, there's competency, there's real skills.
Yeah.
There's real, there's local ability to do this, which isn't to say that doesn't exist elsewhere. It exists in Brazil, it exists in India. But there is this strong potential in Europe to do something about this. And if Europe does it, then we can also help others succeed in that and collaborate with these other countries and these other communities elsewhere. And so, I mean, obviously I can't speak for Meredith, but I suspect that she was interested in helping make that happen in Europe so as to bolster this worldwide movement.
Yeah, because one of the pain points of European collectives is that the market is very fragmented. There are different types of languages, cultures, and it's very hard to find collaborative ground for that, I guess. So that's kind of how you facilitate these movements, right?
Yes, but I think it's true that we have a fragmented market, that we have, I forget how many languages, 20-something languages, a lot of languages, and different cultures, different local rules. But if we look at how the Indians were able to do it, India has, I think, 22 official languages. And that's not counting the unofficial ones. It's a federal state, and local states also have their own regulations that might differ from state to state, and they've been able to scale some of these sovereign solutions, like the Beacon Protocol, to billion people. And so when you talk to people who've been working on the Beacon Protocol, they're like, well, if you want to scale something, you have to account for this diversity from the get-go. You can't just assume that everything will be flattened in the way that Silicon Valley firms do it. And so there's no reason that we couldn't adopt the same approach in Europe. We don't have to be paralyzed by this diversity.
Yeah, well, I honestly didn't even know that India had so many different languages. So yeah, that's a great example on how that isn't necessarily a barrier. But what many companies see, however, as or portray as a barrier is legislation. The internet originated within the neoliberal capitalistic spirit of the 90s. And I think also that time the dependency on big tech started to grow, and now regulation has become so important, especially within Europe. And the US constantly, openly makes an enemy out of Europe because of these regulations. And it's often said Europe can't innovate because, and they can't compete because of these strict rules. But more and more organizations and movements are showing that isn't necessarily the case, right? What are your thoughts on this?
I mean, I think we've also restricted ourselves to thinking too much that all that Europe could do is regulation. Regulation is important, but we shouldn't only be doing regulation. And I think that's part of the Eurostax message, mm-hmm. is that, yes, we need regulation because unregulated markets just tilt and they become unusable by consumers and they become monopolized. We've mm-hmm. definitely seen this happen in tech. But we need to not just, people keep returning to this Brussels effect where we regulate and this is the source of power in Europe. I think that's insufficient. I think understanding what needs to be done in the digital space is really understanding how infrastructure works. There's way too much focus on this idea that we can regulate it from the outside without building it, and way too much focus on the idea that the dominance of current tech players comes from innovation. Neither of these is true. It's impossible to manage infrastructure only with regulation. You need public actors, not necessarily the state, but public actors, to manage collective infrastructure in a way that works for all stakeholders, because that's the only way that you get a system that doesn't create rules that basically are imposed on the users of the infrastructure, exactly as we're seeing in the digital space. Mm-hmm. So that's one side. We need to build something. And on the side of innovation, these tech monopolies were not built by innovation, and they won't be broken by innovation. So all the European Union, especially the Commission's project to basically spray and pray money around and hope that innovation will sprout, you can't innovate on captured infrastructure. Mm-hmm. One way to think about it is, let's assume that, say, Elon Musk or Sundar Pichai owned all the roads in Europe, right? How would we liberate ourselves from that? What would we have to do, right? When you own the roads, you can tax vehicles, you can decide the rules, only Cybertrucks or Nazis can use the fast lane, that kind of stuff. That's the kind of power you get from infrastructure. If you think that innovating is going to get you out of that problem, then I'm afraid I have some bad news, right? Because you could have a lab and give it billions of euros and say, hey, make me the best road, and we're going to disrupt the road network. And then your lab, after a few years, might have 20 meters of amazing asphalt with the best sign and et cetera, but you still don't own the roads. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we need a major push to invest in building digital infrastructure. And what I mean by digital infrastructure is not just, cloud and data centers and connectivity. Those are important, but those are just the lower layers and not where most of the value is created. Digital infrastructure is search, social, advertising, browsers, operating systems, commerce systems, et cetera, and we need a major push to have public infrastructure, public digital infrastructure in every single one of those domains. And by public, doesn't have to be state operated, but at this level, we do need some degree of state investment to get it off the ground. So that's how we can really build. And then once we run our own infrastructure, then we can make it compatible with regulation. Mm-hmm. And if you make your infrastructure compatible with the regulation that you have, then all the companies that build on top of it can almost automatically be operate in compliance, which means that you can have a regulated environment without harming innovation, because you don't have to think about it. It's just something that's right there. So you can have your cake and eat it too.
Right. Yeah, that's so interesting, because I think many people sometimes confuse innovation with something better or moving forward. But maybe sometimes it's not better. Sometimes it's keys to slow down and take a kind of critical look towards the deeper layers of the systems that we're using, and not just merely building on top of them, because, many layers of that are quite rotten. And if we just keep on building on top of that, we have kind of a problem. And I think what was fascinating was that the European Commissioner von der Leyen also encouraged to slow down and to not just, get swept on these trends and mythical ideas that AI and moving fast will benefit our society. And I'm curious, do you share that vision, and was that also part of Eurostack?
I mean, in my mind, it's absolutely essential to think in those terms, not necessarily specifically in terms of fast or slow, but in terms of deliberate. I think deliberate innovation, deliberate use of technology is very important. And when you hear deliberate, it becomes very close to deliberative. And really, one of the defining aspects of the current digital infrastructure that we operate on, that's entirely captured by monopolies, is that it's authoritarian. And that's why they can move fast. You can always move fast when you don't need anyone else's opinion and you can do whatever you want. And the problem is, as I was saying, infrastructure has a lot of power. Infrastructure shapes society. Mm-hmm. And if you're operating a society on top of authoritarian infrastructure, then you end up with an authoritarian society. And it's really time for society to push back on that authoritarianism and to reassert its right to make its own determinations. And yes, that means deliberating about how this infrastructure should work, how our technology should work. And again, that's not necessarily regulation. It is much more about building systems in which users, final users, be they businesses in some cases or people in other cases, have a say over how the system itself operates. And, you know, of course, this sounds like it's going to take a lot of meetings and a lot of talking, and sometime it will, but also we can build systems such that they can be respectful of people's preferences mm-hmm. without having to talk about it all the time. So it really is about like building democratic technology from the core of the stack all the way up.
And will you think that if something like that is not happening, what then, would that be a very like large threat against like democratic values, democracy in itself, or what do you feel is the biggest threat actually to digital autonomy at the moment?
I mean, yeah, either we do that or we say goodbye to democracy. It's like it's one or the other. You can't have both. Mm-hmm. And so
that sounds very urgent.
It's urgent. I mean, the best time to do this would have been 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think we're seeing many European societies slide into more authoritarian political positions. It's not a coincidence. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to push back while we still have enough of a democracy to do so. Mm-hmm. This is why it's been so frustrating that the European Commission supposedly has tech sovereignty as its focus, but has essentially been doing nothing for the past 5 years and continues to do nothing in the new mandate. They are completely focused on AI gigafactories, and absolutely no one outside the Commission has the slightest idea what that means. Mm-hmm. And there's been engagement from member states, there's been engagement from parliament, there's engagement from businesses, there's engagement from civil society, there's engagement from scholars. Essentially, across society, people are coming together and either participating in Eurostack or participating in very similar discussions. Every conference I go to where I talk about technology and democracy, you know, 15, 20 people come talk to me afterwards, and they're like, yes, we need to do something. Why isn't anyone doing anything? And the Commission is completely absent.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what they're doing in there, and no one seems to understand exactly what their focus is. But clearly, they seem to be in an isolated island in which they sadly don't see the need for urgent action to support democracy.
Yeah, well, that's actually quite scary. And maybe it's good to dive a little bit more into what actually Eurostack is doing or how it works, because I guess it might be good to understand a little bit more of the foundations of how this actually works. So can you maybe explain that?
Sure. So I most of the work on Eurostack that's happened so far has been, I would say, at a high level, more strategic level. Mm-hmm. And so it's essentially providing a common foundation for all these segments of infrastructure to operate on. And so really it's defining infrastructure, explaining what digital infrastructure is, explaining how to change it such that it could have better governance. And better governance, you know, whether you care about democracy or competitiveness, it doesn't matter, because you get both from you know, if you have one, you have the other in this case. And so a lot of the work has been in establishing this. And so that's why it's been mostly reports, mostly talk, and not a lot of action.
Yeah.
But the next step, the hope initially was that by, you know, having this wide spectrum of support from across society, be it, you know, civil society, businesses, etc., we would convince the Commission to jump into action. This hasn't happened. So we're moving ahead without them. European society is able to move forward and to shift things without their support. And so at this stage, we're moving much more into like looking at different components of that stack and figuring out how to solve the problem in each specific area.
Yeah, so and who is also required and needed to solve that specific area?
Yes, basically bringing together the people who have the technical ability, ideally the funding ability, mm-hmm. and the way to think in terms of governance. Essentially, for infrastructure to work, you need technology, governance, and funding. Yeah. So we need to like have that sorted out for each component. There's a lot of digital infrastructure, and we're not going to solve everything at once.
But what are you mainly focusing on now?
I'm focusing on wherever there's opportunity, right?
Okay.
And
yeah.
So one very significant opportunity is in social media. Mm-hmm. So we currently have the technology to design a sovereign infrastructure in social media that is interoperable, that is governable, that works across the world. And there's been interest from a number of nation states. We're going to be meeting with people in Norway as part of the IGF at the end of June. There's been conversations with other member states, there's conversations with private actors and mm-hmm. social media companies and startups. So there's something congealing there that we're temporarily calling Eurosky. It's just like a working name. But we have essentially the plan and the people and the technology, and we're just looking for a bit more funding, but not much. This has basically joined forces. There's been a joining of forces between the Eurostack people on the Eurostack side and people in the Free Our Feeds project. And so yes, we've started deploying independent infrastructure in social media, and I think we're going to have a system that works greatly.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt. How does one become part of Eurostack? Like, what do you have to do? Can everybody just apply and sign up, or do you also need to require certain standards?
There's no specific. I mean, there's no Eurostack organization, right? Mm-hmm. So, if you want to participate in the conversations, just you know, write to the people, mm-hmm. write in public.
Very democratic.
Or more importantly, like start working on one of the components, right? Mm-hmm. So explaining how, figuring out how, you know, let's say, I don't know, you care about mobile operating systems. And so figuring out like, what exactly do we need? What are the points of control that we have to break? What do we need to build? What European players exist in the space? So you can think of like Mirena or like EOS or what's the one? Fairphone. How would you convene these people into like a small informal consortium? And what would they do together? What kind of funding would they need? What kind of governance would we have?
Yeah.
That kind of work is what really needs to happen. And there's no gatekeeping, right? This is a whole of European society project. So if you want to jump in and work on the topic, just do so. Of course, write to the people so that we can coordinate. But the door is open, really.
Yeah, that's amazing, and I hope that listeners actually will love to join and feel tempted to. I'm actually kind of curious to this idea. It sounds also quite a new way of organizing or shaping collaborative frameworks, I guess. Is there an industry that you were inspired by, or did you learn from certain happenings in the past from industries?
I wouldn't say that there's a specific industry that I've been inspired by or that others have been inspired by. However, I've been doing open source and open standards for 30 years, and the idea that you can shift something based on an informal collaboration is certainly not foreign to those worlds, right? Mm-hmm. If you bring the right people around the table and you figure out a way of organizing so that you can put something in the world that brings about change, then why not do so? I think one thing that's challenging is that traditionally a lot of this, many similar projects have often either done only the technology or maybe only policy, and we really need to do more than that. We need to do all these things at once.
Yeah.
And we need to do that in a world in which people have a very superficial understanding of how to change things. This digital transformation happened so fast. If we step back, it's just like a few decades, right? People haven't learned the ropes about like what the pressure points are, how you can have political impact on this, and so we sort of like have to teach how the system works at the same time as we change it.
Yeah.
But you know, that's also how democracy works. The best way to build democracy is to teach it.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, talking about fragmented markets as before, I think also a lot of domains where people are working in is also very fragmented, where interdisciplinary, collaborative partnerships are very much needed, because digitalization is not something that is apart from every industry. It's incorporated within every industry. So we also need a kind of an overview of what actually is happening within these things to build from that and to continue. And I feel that there might also be a need for maybe a different angle or a different view on what entrepreneurship actually kind of means. What do you think there? What do you feel like the future of entrepreneurship will hold?
I mean, I think all of that is true. I think essentially, so several things to say to that. In part, I absolutely agree. I think technology is a humanities. People treat it as a science-y thing, but it most of the time it really isn't. You're just like putting together different components in specific ways, and they all have to center about around human usage. And so without the humanities aspect, you're not really a good technologist. Mm-hmm. I think one thing that I've certainly seen over the past almost a year now of talking to many policymakers from all kinds of countries around the world is that people have this kind of like tech paralysis, where like, oh, it's technology, therefore I don't know about it, I don't want to touch it, I just like listen to the technologists. And that's really nonsense. Every time I speak with policymakers and I break down how we could structure social media, for instance, instead of looking at it as this like big scary monolith, how you can like separate out different parts and govern them independently, people, you know, within a few, maybe 10 minutes or so, they start like, you know, looking at me and going like, oh, hang on, we know how to do that. That's just like governing anything else, you know, like sewage or trains or whatever else we've been doing before. And I'm like, yes, it's not different. It, just because it's digital, like we have to stop believing it. It's this kind of magical separate world that you don't understand. If I break it down for you, if you just ask someone who like to like break it apart into components, then you 100% are able to govern this for yourselves without even having a technical expert, or with minimal impact from from a technical expert. And in terms of entrepreneurship, I agree with you as well. I think right now, on the current infrastructure, it's very difficult to have a business model that is not the business model that favors the people who run the infrastructure, right? That is basically what it means to run infrastructure. You can decide on the rules, you can decide the rules that apply to the people who use it, and therefore you decide which business models are going to succeed and which ones are going to fail. And business models also map to how you organize companies, and so you're at a disadvantage if you want to build a company that works differently from what is expected by the rules that are imposed on you. Mm-hmm. If we bring about like one fundamental thing in how infrastructure is supposed to operate when you do it well, is to have a certain neutrality with respect to its users. And so if we switch this digital infrastructure into a much more neutral way, like a road doesn't tell you like if your truck business should be like hierarchical or co-op or something else, and if we switch that, I'm convinced we're going to see a lot more business models that focus on regenerative use cases, that focus on cooperative organizations, et cetera, simply because they'll become possible. It's not that everyone, you know, it's not that 90% of business people will suddenly go like, oh, yeah, let's make a co-op. but the I don't know how many it is, like 10%, 20%, whoever it is who would like to do it but cannot today will be enabled to do it. And so I think we'll see a flourishing of that, yes.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we're actually already pushing for time, but there are two more things that I would love to discuss. And the first one is actually, so we see now that one of the struggles that we have, especially in Europe, is that most talents are off to the US when they graduate, because the opportunities, the money, everything is there. So how do we keep people here and make sure that they work on this new infrastructure?
So I think there are two things to consider here. First is the money thing. It's certainly true that wages in the US are much higher. I just spent 9 years living in the US, and yes, you get paid a lot more. However, your money buys a lot less. And having returned to Europe as of not quite a year ago, I can say that significantly lower wages are buying me a much better lifestyle. And so that's definitely something that I think we could do a better job of comparing, is that, I don't have to worry about whether my kids will have, social, health coverage if I'm between jobs. Like, just when switching between jobs, you lose your health coverage. Mm-hmm. That is not a concern I have to worry about. Yeah. I don't have to worry about school shootings as much. So there's a lot that's to think about. And yeah. In terms of the work, I think the moment we build infrastructure that is not captured by tech monopolies, we make it a lot easier. A great example is, I was talking about the social media infrastructure that we're putting together. A great example is this small company in Berlin, operated by Sebastian Vogelsang, that's building an Instagram equivalent. He's basically one or two people doing the work, because so much of the infrastructure is designed to support that work. It means that you can create very creative, very innovative new companies with far less investment and far less work. Yeah. And so we can create an environment that's actually very encouraging to particularly young entrepreneurs, or not even young. I mean, fuck that. I'm almost 50, and I still have a few companies in me. I think we can make it very attractive.
Yeah, be smarter about how to make use of the money, but also think wisely on what kind of future do we want to live in, apart from what earns the most money, and think more long term. And we see a lot of lawsuits happening around the world. Google, one facing now. Do you think that's important in moving towards more digital sovereignty? Because Google is facing these lawsuits for market monopolies in both information technology, but also in the advertising industry. Do you think it's actually needed to break up these very massive forces to equalize the field?
I think we can overthrow the current authoritarian tech regime without these lawsuits, but I think the lawsuits help a lot.
Okay.
And in Europe, like, there's been like it's been like very we talk a big game about anti-monopoly laws, but we don't do much. It's tiny fines, lawsuits that take forever. We could like definitely boost the work on breaking up these companies, because what they do is illegal, and what they do is bad for society. So there's really no reason to refrain from breaking them up. It would definitely help build the alternative if the incumbents were broken up. We can mm-hmm. do it without that, but it would significantly support a more democratic internet if we broke up these totalitarian companies.
Yeah. Yeah, and then to maybe end this conversation, I'm curious, how do you think that Eurostack will ensure a more sovereign digital future?
Oh, that's an 8-hour long question, but I think essentially, by making it so that different consortiums of civil society, business, government, etc., come together to operate and regulate and govern these different components of digital infrastructure, we can essentially ensure that inside of Europe we can make our own decisions. In fact, not just necessarily at the European level, also at the level of member states and at the level of smaller communities as well. If we make infrastructure, digital infrastructure governable, we'll have much better sovereignty. And what's great is that there is so much interest in doing that around the world that mm-hmm. as we do so, we will also start collaborating with a lot of very interesting work happening in other countries, and that will be very enriching to technology and to European culture.
Amazing. Well, that sounds super promising. And I hope that digital autonomy will be put on the European and the worldwide agenda, because I think it's, yeah, something that's very, very much needed in these pressing and kind of disturbing times. Thank you so much. It was super interesting to talk to you, and good luck.
Thank you very much for having me, and thanks. Yeah, we're going to need it.
Data Morgana is funded by the European Union. Views and opinions expressed are, however, those of the authors only and do not necessarily reflect those of the European Union or the Directorate General for Communications Network Content and Technology. Neither the European Union nor the granting authority can be held responsible for them.